finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bale Bell, also podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Adam Camilleri and Red Powell.
Oh, good eye.
What up? Everybody's back. So awesome. Got some cool topics I want to talk about this week. I want to talk about getting someone brand new into painting, like the hobby side of it, and maybe kind of like the hobby in general. Got a little personal story to share. And in the back half of the show, we'll talk about the grand narrative coming up. Red's actually going to be participating in the grand narrative, and you know, want to know what you're going to be doing so far, and also kind of maybe touch on some of your experiences in the past. But this will be 400 something players participating in a story-driven event that will impact the actual story of Warhammer 40,000, maybe even more than 400, because it's going to be in two separate locations, in Atlanta and in Nottingham. Forgive me, I'm not using the names of the systems that they will be in, but they will be basically universe-spanning, which would be cool to talk about, but that's coming up in the back half of the show. Hope everybody's doing all right. Thanks for listening to the half show we did last week. We're going to be back to normal this week, and I want to talk about getting a new painter into the hobby. This new painter is my son. My son decided he's been playing a version of Warhammer, either with myself or rolling dice or with a friend of his that's come over, and he just got a lot more interested in it than he has in the past. And he said, you know, can we paint some models? I'm like, oh, yes, we can. We can paint some models. And I immediately in my brain threw the brakes on. I'm like, we could do all of it. How many thousands of points do you want to paint right now? You know, but like, no, what? Let's just take it in a little bitty bite size chunk. So he likes Necrons. While we were painting, he's like, I think I need a Resurrection Orb. I'm like, yeah, you probably do. We'll figure that out later. But he's... we have some of the models built, especially from like the Indomitus stuff, and he's been using those, and so picked out what would you like to paint. He wants to paint the Cryptek and the Murder Barrels and the Reanimator. That's what he picked out to start painting, and I'll show you them in just a second. And I kind of helped get him going. Like, I primed the miniatures for him, Lead Belcher, and he picked out the colors from there. And I, of course, told him some techniques, how to apply a wash, how to dry brush, how to shade, and you'll see the results here in a second. But with the strategy that I went about doing it, I mentioned, you know, kind of wanted to put on the brakes of not overwhelming him with every possible thing that you're going to need. Like, thankfully, of course, I have a bunch of paints, and we didn't have to go out and like, well, let's get 8 paint pots or whatever, or I'm going to explain every single step that you have to go along the way. No, we actually just took it one step at a time, one process at a time. And in some cases, I would show him like on one part of the model and then let him do the rest of the model or whatever. And I'll shut up here in a second, but he was like real nervous about messing up, you know, so we're going to cover that as a topic. And also, you know, not really sure how to hold the model. He's left-handed, by the way. So when I'm showing him an example of something, he's got to do a little bit of a different process with how he does it, how he holds the model. So, you know, that's where we kicked off, is like very, very beginning of the process, choose a unit, maybe a model to do, and then let's paint up a test scheme with some test techniques and see where it goes. It was successful, by the way, but I was curious.
It's really important. You know, I've a similar thing. My 12-year-old and 10-year-old are engaged, and I know that my other two younger boys also want to get into it. You know, some of the things, Paul, I'm with you all the way. I mean, similar steps and processes of how I found when dealing with spray paint and whatnot, as much as I'd love for my kids to just full on board, just start blasting everything, there's some collateral damage involved. And so, you know, I'm good to prime. I don't mind priming and getting it started. And then I, you know, try to kind of just like a, you know, you might recommend for anybody getting into it, just not overwhelming yourself can be such a thing. And then really trying to, I mean, in so many cases, even in some of the stuff I know we've talked about going forward, like, who doesn't struggle with the anxiety of messing this stuff up? Like, you see all these awesome products and amazing paint jobs that you know, like Tanya, that you do, that I'm like sitting here just like trying to cobble my way forward. And like, you know, my kids see that stuff and they're like, man, I want to do that. And I'm like, well, that's great. It takes a lot of practice and effort to get there. And so don't, like, I you know, it's really, and to that end, there's also a part of me that, you know, Paul, you know, you probably pulled the Necrons out of somewhere, right? Like you had them from some, but you just got to let those models go, right? And you just like, you're like, hey, just have at it. And like, there's a messiness to it that you just have to accept that they're going to go in a direction. And you're like, oh man, like I, but they got to learn and they got to mess up through it just like we have. And that kind of piece. And so there's just as much of some stress management for us, the people that are trying to help them through the process, as much as them going through it. And, you know, a key thing with my son, Michael, 10 years old, I mean, he's doing an amazing job bringing together some Tyranids. But, it, you know, at some point I'm like, hey, buddy, if you feel like you're getting overwhelmed, or, I mean, you're painting 5 gene stealers. That's, we're just doing 5 gene stealers right now. And you're going to cover the whole thing almost in red, like it's primed in Wraithbone. We're just going to slap some Blood Angel red on it, contrast, just to get the meaty parts done. And then we're going to throw Talisar blue over the shells. And so, like, if you get red on the armor or whatever, like, the blue's going to cover it up for the most part. So just let it go. Good save there, Adam. Everybody saw that.
I'm not here.
Okay. So with that, I mean, it's just something to work through, but I really like, I mean, it's a continuous process with Michael that, I mean, I've done doing a great job, but at the same time, like, hey, if you get frustrated, just stop. Don't keep playing into the frustration. Just, there's nothing's forcing our hand. It's not like he's got some, you know, grand narrative and 3 weeks that he needs to finish painting an entire army for or anything. Yeah. Like, he just needs to keep doing it. He'll be fine. He's got all the time.
Some part of me was like, well, what if there's a ringer needed? Do I need to have this Necron army done and on standby?
right.
So I have a couple of times taught like really beginner entry, learn to paint classes. And I've kind of realized that there's two different types of people who at least come to these classes. The first one are the people who want to do it step by step, exactly how you say to do it. They take the time. They're very careful. And then there's other people, and I tend to fall into this category as well when it comes to painting, that they'll listen to you for the first 2 minutes and then just look at all the stuff that's in front of them and just go. And I try to make room for both those types of people when I do run classes, because at the end of the day, I think sometimes some people forget that, like, yes, you can step by step technically do it the way that, you know, is generally considered the way to do it, but it is at the end of the day still art. So if that doesn't tickle your fancy, you absolutely can go off and do your own thing. I just finished judging a painting contest today, and
pretty recent, that qualifies. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went through, and every single person who entered, I gave at least a paragraph of things that I liked that I thought maybe could use a little work. And as somebody who kind of looks at the hobby in a more sort of artistic, creative kind of way, if somebody was taking chances and doing their own thing, I would really encourage that. Like, one person painted Death Guard in a way that was really interesting, with lots of different, like, freehand, kind of veiny looking stuff and like dotted, like pixelated kind of look to it. It was really, really cool. And when I see that, I like encourage people to lean into that, you know, like, okay, that's your style, super unique. How can you make that more intentional? Like, how can you make that texture look more intentional and not like a mistake? Or if it is a mistake, maybe just make it intentional. Maybe it's something cool, you know? So when then to your point about like how people can sometimes get in their head a little bit about making mistakes, well, sometimes those mistakes actually lead to you developing your own unique personal style. And nothing is cooler than that when it comes to miniatures, in my opinion.
there are painters out there that have distinct styles. It's like they paint that certain way. You can tell that, you know, that you can almost look at it and see the traces of that person's paint, those hands on the models. You could tell, oh, that's that person, that's that person, which is cool. It's obviously a thing. He had a bunch of questions. My son had a bunch of questions of, well, do I have to paint the models a certain way? You know, and I was very careful to not suggest, oh, well, you have to have them for a certain dynasty or whatever. Like, the answer, no, whatever you want. What colors do you like? You know, this is now Necrons. I do consider them a fairly forgiving army. You
sure.
Know, they're
at least in painting.
Yeah.
Construction is something else.
Yeah. But you know, they've got like this bones, the skeleton, and they've got stuff that lays on top of the skeleton, you know, so you've got kind of like two distinct things to kind of work with there. And if you can go easily go that direction and get a nice looking army. And, you know, basically just asked him, what colors would you like? You know, and then I gave some suggestions about, you know, maybe a contrasting color to be like their eyeballs or whatever, you know. And but he chose, you know, gave him some several suggestions, and he chose, and even down to the basic. I'm going to show the model off, so, or one of the models off at least. Let's see if I can get the light. It's like terrible for, but yeah, here's his model.
That's good.
Looks great.
It's great. Yeah.
And what I did, the part my hand in it, and maybe not even this one, but I primed the models, but then I showed him how to apply some good old-fashioned Nuln oil.
Hey.
Because we primed them, lead belcher, yeah. Nuln oil them, and then he dry brushed them Stormhost over the entire model. I painted one section of the armor blue. He painted the other section and the rest of the sections blue, and then shaded them with basilicum gray, which the color, the paint types were my suggestion. He did not come upon this on his own, but that's okay. Use basilicum gray to shade, and then edge highlighted with, I think it's Calgar blue.
Yeah.
And use the technique of bracing his elbows on the table, angling the brush and angling the model, and got what I consider to be a pretty convincing highlight on these. And then gave him some basing options, went with the Martian Ironer, largely because he asked me what is this arm on this base of this guy or whatever. I'm like, that's a Castellan robot from the Adeptus Mechanicus, and you know, they're from Mars.
I think that it's a really good choice. I know that's how he made the decision, but if there was a small part of him that said, ooh, that looks cool, like, he might have that innate eye for, you know, color theory and all of that, right? I think that sometimes the thing that can make your miniature really pop is to give it some sort of contrasting base, which I know, Red, that probably hurts you a little bit because you want your soldiers to probably be camouflaged in. But when you're looking at the model, if the base is the same color as the model, then you're going to lose the models. They're just not going to stand out.
You're 100% correct. And that's where, you know, I think, at least in my case, in my approach with my boys and how we were kind of getting into it, there was a balance of the creativity versus the process and how we went about it and kind of the color choices. You know, Paul, I did something very similar where it was like, well, what do you, like, where do you want to go with it? Like, let them kind of pick the direction. And then admittedly, I prescribed it a little bit.
Yeah, in 40K, you know, with later, we have these things. We have rules associated with the certain color schemes, you know, and he's read the rules. He knows these things exist. So, but you're still letting him know it's okay to go his own direction. And one of the things I wanted to stress was, like, there are no mistakes. Like, even if we get paint somewhere we don't want it to be, like, what you're looking at is there was some touch-ups done on these models, you know, and it's okay to make those mistakes. And it's also it can okay to fix your mistakes. And also, you know, reinforcing the fact that, you know, you're looking at this model right here. Your opponents will not be, like, they're not going to have the relationship that you have with this model. So, you know, don't worry about it that much. Just, you know, get it to where you're happy with it, and let's take it from there. So again, Necron's very forgiving, but I'm very trying to go about it in a way that is letting him know it's okay to make those mistakes because we could always touch it up. Like, we're paying for ourselves here.
And to Tanya's point, I mean, I've I took the time with the color schemes to talk about the color wheel, to talk about, you know, green versus purple, or you know, balancing some of those things and like where that kind of contrast can draw it. I mean, and that's where my Michael with Tyranids, I mean, he didn't know it, but he leaned into High Fleet Behemoth with the blue shells and the red skin, like, but he just wanted that like vibrant red skin and vibrant blue shells, and that's where he went with it, and it's cool. But then like at some point, you know, he was looking around at different stuff, he's like, well, what if I just change it to like this or this? And I was like, well, that's cool, but also like you've already painted, we just finished painting like 30 models in red blue, like how about we just stick with that for this.
It's okay to put some guardrails up on there, you know. Yeah,
that's what, you know, and I and it's also, again, there's that, and then the, you know, we're sitting here playing Space Marine 2 together, right? And like the you know, Tanya, to your point, like bright yellow Space Marines in a jungle, like there's just no hiding them. Like, but I'm not sure they're that worried about it. Clearly the Tyranids aren't, because if they just want to stealth, they just literally vanish like the Lictor does. So like they can be whatever color they want. They're invisible anyways, whenever they want to be. So it's fun like that. And there's things, you know, disbelief and whatnot that we can suspend, especially as they get into it. And there, I'll tell you another thing that helps with, you know, and I think probably many of our friends here listening are familiar with this, that when you're in the middle of something, you know, it's really nice to help build the discipline of kind of focusing and getting through some models and whatnot, of having something on in the background, right? Mm-hmm. Of whether you have a podcast on in the background, or you have an audio book. I mean, my boys
pages.
And I are going through Gaunt's Ghost right now. So it's good to have in the background. Lots of stuff.
Well, it's an interesting thing, like what is your guys' belief on patience? Do you believe you can be taught patience, or patience is something you just have or you don't?
Let's find out. No. That's a great question.
I mean, I do try yours at times.
Yeah. No, that's actually a great question, because, you know, there are, maybe I actually questioned or not. Again, I'm trying to avoid the mistakes of overwhelming what is now just a fun thing that he's suggesting, yeah, into where it becomes not fun or a chore, you know, and
sure,
really doing my level best to not make it a chore. Because I think you gotta imagine there's like a lot of Warhammer around here, right? So I think there's a tendency to, when like you're super into something and then someone suggests even the thinnest amount of interest, to like just hope that they'll dive in head first with you, and
sure,
some
sure,
and you're the one filling up the tub, you know.
Well, and so to that, you know, and Adam, you asked the question, I was thinking about it, you know, and I work out with my boys too, right? Like I get them up every once in a while to join me in my workouts, and there's aspects to, you know, doing like a plank, for example, or a run or something, right? Like sometimes nobody wants to go for a run. Sometimes nobody wants to do certain things. But, and even with the things that we don't want to do, in a lot of cases, I found that there are thresholds, right? Like cognitive thresholds on things. And that the more you tend to do them, in some cases, don't get me wrong, there's some things that I've never wanted to do. I don't like waking up early in the morning, and I've been doing it for 19 years now. And so like kind of gotten over that, but I don't like it.
Right,
that doesn't mean I want to do it, right? So with like getting through and holding to processes and working on patience and things like that, I think there are cognitive thresholds that if you really want to get to it, this is not the same conversation we had a couple weeks ago about like, can you train through everything? Can you just practice into everything? In many cases, though, I do think that there are cognitive thresholds that you can work into. I'm not saying that you're going to, you know, break any world records or go crazy or anything, but there is something to experience, and experiencing something and then realizing that it may not have been as bad as your mind initially thought it was at the beginning versus where it's at later. You know what I mean?
My opinion on that is that the reason we started with just one or two models was to like be able to get a win, a couple of successes under the belt,
100%.
To be able to kind of visualize what success felt like, and we are to the point where we're about to paint 10 or 20 warriors.
Yeah. Oh, the real test.
Yeah, and I've had like discussion was like it's going to be a little bit different, you know, when you're trying to paint you know a whole squad, but there is some satisfaction of knowing that you've done it. But we're also not putting any time limits on this. Like we're not saying we have to like we're not driving this for an event or something like that, or has to get done by a certain time. And right. maybe that's where that patience can maybe be minimized if it's not there.
Well, and with Necrons, my question always is are they already built? And really the Indominus ones and the Leviathan ones are the same. Like they're snapped together, so they're not nearly as bad as some of the others. Like Necrons aren't horrible, but they are a test of patience in building them first. And so, you know, if you've already got them built, Paul, I mean, you've already beat half the game there with the Necrons.
I built some. So he's got kind of a bit of a eclectic collection of stuff. Sure. Because again, it's just whatever. It's just rule of cool, whatever's driving it. But he was asking me at dinner, last night. He was like, so, you know, what do I need? I'm like, well, race have always been good. You know,
sure have.
Like, race, sure pretty have. Much. You don't have any race right now. So if you want to get some race, we could do that. But, it, you know, really letting him lead the discussion and drive the discussion on these things. And that is, that's where my patience is coming in. I'm trying to, like, because I don't want to be like, here's your 2,000 point list. Now we're training, you know.
Go build monoliths in Satan.
But so far, we've had a good time. He has asked to continue doing it with the painting and stuff, and gonna try to get going on it. And I really do think like he could be proud of these models, and he's putting in the work. So and
I wish my first models looked that good.
I'm really not too bad. I mean, it really, but it's the process. Like what I've come to kind of learn over the years is finding ways to make the models look good with just kind of the products and the technique and not have to rely on any kind of natural talent. So, that shines through on models. Like this is the third Necron army that I've had a hand in assembling and painting. But it's, you know, it's going to be driven by what he wants, and he's putting in the effort. Like I said, on the models you've seen so far, I don't know if you saw this guy, but I've only really painted like one armor section, and he's done all the rest. So did that just an example as we got to those steps. But he got a pretty good hand on the dry brush and the washing, and I was like, proud papa moment, and I don't mind bragging a bit, is when he got that basilicum gray exactly into the recesses, and the product did what the product was supposed to do, and then when he kind of figured out how to get, you know, that kind of rudimentary edge highlight on the surfaces, and looks pretty convincing. He also there's three layers of green on those eyes, like a large green dot, nice. A smaller green dot, and then a dot of ogryn camo to be like the reflection lens. He did all that. Of course, he has smaller hands and better eyes. You know, so. But that's where I was trying to instruct, like, well, we could do it like this, you know, and then you do this and this and this, and you get a nice effect, you know, but we'll see where it goes. Let's take a break, then we'll come back and talk about the narrative. Y'all have any new painters, or you have some advice for new painters, or you struggled with some of the same things, like, did y'all jump all in, like, as soon as someone, you know, gave you kind of that passing interest of overwhelming them, which I think we're all, like, we're kind of, like, wired to do that because there's so much to talk about with Warhammer. But anyway, if y'all made some of those mistakes, let us know. Love to hear about it, and also want to hear some success stories as well. But we're right back and talk about the grand narrative.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc., please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thank you for checking out our sponsors and clicking on all the stuff. Like, share, subscribe. That's all the kind of things that tricks the algorithms into having other people come listen to us, which we appreciate, babbling on about Warhammer and talking about all Warhammer-related things. That last segment has me jazzed and sitting there looking at the models like, you know, he's going to crush my face with them next week. Or, you know, where I mean, yeah, we'll see. Also working on some Blood Angel stuff, as you might imagine. Everybody got that army list fine-tuned as people are getting ready for events. And speaking of events, events, Grand Narratives on the horizon. This is going to be happening at the same place, same time as the World Championships of Warhammer are going down in Atlanta, Georgia. Grand Narratives is going to be happening in Atlanta and in Nottingham at the same time. Hundreds of players playing the Starry German event. The players, I think, at this point in time are probably getting briefings and information about the event. I would have to imagine that's the case. And
yeah, you're playing so this year. I am, and so I'm really glad to be participating. This is my third time participating, and the event team has been over the top in communication. I want to say about a month ago the Discord started up, and about a month, I wouldn't say a month, but a few weeks before that, they started dropping like the event package of information where it talks about. So we're in this conflict of the Grand Narrative is going down in the Cassandra system. And it's laying out exactly what's going on in the Cassandra system. And it's actually, you can highlight like where Cassandra is actually part of the Kalnath expanse. And so Kalnath, that's one that people have seen. There was a Kill Team box set that went down in that. There was some other pieces that kind of laid out, the lore that was going on in that. So Cassandra is being brought into the highlight of this. And then in that package that they delivered, they deliver really a basis of like, what's the synopsis, like why? And in the Cassandra system, there's this essentially a system-wide security system that orients around a gun that essentially you can see from space or whatever, right? Like, I mean, it's a massive gun that can literally lob shells at incoming fleets and stuff like that. So it's a big deal. And there's the fanfare that the Imperium has for this gun that they've currently control, at least at this time. There's like processions and parades and stuff just to load the gun and stuff like that. And then so they've set the scene. You kind of get the idea that there's this big gun that the Imperium has been defending, but the Kalnath expanse has, I mean, we've seen Gene Stealer Colts, we've seen the Tau, we've seen all sorts of things going down in this area that are wide range. And so then they lay out the warlords. And so there's three factions. Last year they did it a little differently where they had PAX and the PAX, P-A-C-T, and then plural with S, is that, you know, that they had one that was like the Pact of Order, the Pact of Destruction, and the Pact of Resistance. Previous to that, they'd had just, you know, the Loyalist faction, the Imperial faction, essentially, the Traitor faction, and then they had the Interlopers. And now this year, they've kind of moved back towards that. There's a Imperial faction, Chaos faction, and a Xenos faction. I was in the Loyalist faction the first year, and then unfortunately due to some work stuff, I was a little late getting in, so I ended up joining the Resistance faction right there at the end, right before we kicked off year two, and then this year I'm back with the Imperial faction. And so they highlight for each of those warlords, I mean, just amazing that the people that they had them playing in previous years, these cosplayers that played right into the role and were in role the whole time. And so they even have like, a, I mean, very well done. Everything is to be communicated in game, in the narrative. And then they have a code word that they essentially drop if they're going to like step out of character. And then if there's no code word, then you just assume everything's in the narrative, which is really cool. The Discord is all done in character. The other information they gave us, they broke down the battle zones. There's these different areas, key areas that are going to be fought over. And each of those areas has a Vox Localum, which is kind of like a mini warlord that's responsible for those or is attached to in some way those different war zones. And so going back to the warlords, there's a rogue trader for the Imperials, which is they've got some kind of archaeotech, and their objective that they're coming into the Cassandra system for the Imperial factions. They're trying to, and this is all like free, like you can, you know, it's not like a super secret stuff. It's all available to everybody.
You're not giving information to the other factions right now, are you?
Correct. Yeah. This is stuff anybody can get. The rogue trader has this archaeotech, and they're trying to find these keys to unlock the archaeotech. And they're of course, you know, rogue traders and the missions that they have, and they're ultimately supposedly all within the will of the Emperor, and I'm sure only good things will come from whatever they open up in this archetype casket, right?
Now, are you bringing like past experiences from other stories into this, or?
Well, I mean, I'd say anywhere in any 40K lore, I don't think anybody should, go, blindly and blissfully into anything in 40K. Because I think just about, it doesn't matter what faction you are, something has always come back around and bit somebody for whatever advantage they thought they were getting. And that's just a, grim, dark 101 lesson. But the Chaos Warlord is a word bearer who is, he's got this apotheosis kind of thing that he's trying to achieve. He has this ritual he needs to complete to unlock this artifact that will then, help him in his path to furthering chaos. And so that it sounds typical, but at the same time, like I think, I was watching another conversation play out between some folks where they're talking about everybody's fan favorite, Erebus. And Erebus made a lot of things happen. When word bearers get involved, they everybody hates them, which makes it sound like they're well-written bad guys in a lot of cases. And even then, everybody's like, I don't care. I don't like them. And I don't want it. But word bearers tend to make bad things happen. Like, they move things along, And so, I'm excited to see.
I'm a little heretical right now with what you're saying.
Again, it's just referencing history here. The interlopers, though, I'm really excited to see the interlopers. He's a mech, but he's also, I think he's also a weird boy. And so he's like a mix of the two. And so the interlopers are being led by an orc, which I'm really excited to see because there's some other special stuff behind all that. And they did some of this, like, kind of built into this character. I'm not saying it's a direct, all the stuff's going to carry forward from it, but from the, like, Tacoma Open and other things, they've kind of played into this and built up into it. The Tacoma Open narrative was set on a kill sphere where this...
Not a kill sphere. I hate those.
Yeah, everyone else did too, except for the orc who was running it. And that orc is the same orc that's now going to be the warlord for the Xenos faction. So it is really cool, and I'm really excited to see the Voxel Calums. I've always enjoyed kind of how they've the not just the characters, but also the actual people who play them, and I'm looking forward to that.
These are people who are also in costume that are there in the rooms, kind of running the environment. And
correct,
your point of communication when you're not speaking directly to the warlord or needing a judge or something like that. So they have a lot of interaction, and also they're bringing some fun and keeping that presence in the room of the narrative happening.
Right, some people might, think of them in like a moderator-like role. And I think that undersells really what they do. I mean, these really are people who are completely invested in maintaining the momentum of the narrative throughout the event.
Vibologist.
There you go. Really exciting. Really exciting to see. Man, I wish I could share some of this. So there's these in the Discords, right? So the Discords are broken down by the battle groups and the Imperium side. And we can even see so there's the folks that are at Warhammer Worlds in the UK. Like, we can see their battle groups for the Imperium faction, and then there's our Imperial faction battle groups. And so I'm in battle group 8, and we're the Imperator Vigil battle group. And that's, fortunately, just, again, this being my third iteration, I think out of the 10 people in our battle group, 8 are my friends. And so 9 of the 10 are people that we all were able to get together, 9 Imperial players to get it to go. I've actually got, my brother, Chris is in a Chaos battle group where he's with, I think, 6 or 7 of our friends that are together in that group. And so it's a lot of fun, and really trying to bring it all together and play into it, lean into it. Super excited. I can't wait to see what this year is, because both years have been really exciting, day after day, just nonstop fun.
Do you get to challenge your brother to an evil brother, because essentially the good twin and bad twin? Do you get to throw down and challenge him to, winner takes all and end of your line, sir, in the last round?
If I can swing it, I'm going to do everything I can to arrange that storyline wise.
We'll make it happen.
The I'm telling you, the lore, like, we've had a lot of fun with it. I mean, I've that's why I wish I could share it, because there's like pages of this stuff, not just me, but of other people and all the stuff that they've poured into this. My brother, for example, like his stuff. So he's running, and again, like the narrative armies. So his is like a Bellicor army. He's got Bellicor. He's got four of the greater demons, and then he's got like their own little retinues, and like that's his 3,000 points is all this, and he can pull them in and play them out.
That's cool.
And his character, like, you know, and he's got his own cosplay that he's working up. He's a Inquisitor who's like radical, who has like made a deal with Bellicor, who is like. He thinks he's coordinating all these things with Chaos to make things work, and he's going to accomplish some greater Imperial objective eventually while he's sitting here working with Bellicor and all. And he's got, like, it's just awesome. This fun little story thing and kind of the outfit he's got planned for it and all that. I'm really excited to see how it turns out. So it's good.
I'm really excited to hear more about this, because I'm going to be running my own narrative league starting in January. And I want to give too much away because I haven't announced it yet, but I'm going to be in charge of one of the sort of super factions that we have. And I'm also going to be like role playing a war boss. So I'm really interested specifically on how they got other Xenos to follow a war boss.
Sure. Yeah, no, and I'm interested to see how that too, the, like a war boss, right? Like what is a war boss like? I mean, there's got to be some kind of promise. There's got to be some kind of reason, you know, how it all ties in. But I'm excited to see what comes out of it. And there are people, you know, in the Imperial faction, there are, even with us, there's a couple Eldari and Leagues of Votann and things like that. There's a few that have like either been bought off or whatever, paid into it or have some other, but they're tied in with us. But I'm sure that there's something to exactly how the orc has pulled
like,
off.
Hey, buddy, orc, big macho war boss man. We'll let you play in the kill sphere if you come help us out. And he's like, yes, let's go. More time in the kill sphere. It's basically a ball pit for orcs. They want more time in the kill sphere.
You may have figured it out.
Yeah, there you go. I'm really excited to see it.
Spectacular over the last couple of years. Like, just the fun. It seems incredibly fun. That's one of the things that, like, there's so much to do with these types of events. And, you know, of course, with the World Championships happening, you want to be participating in that. With the Grand Narrative, you want to be participating in that. It can't be two places at once, you know. So, very difficult. But the joy on those players' faces in the narrative is, you can't help but want to be a part of it and figure out what's going on. And I think there's going to be some notice and some information and news like from the front, kind of going out to the Warhammer community. So keep your eyes peeled for that. You may even see some narrative information and coverage on the live stream. You know, we might know people who can make that happen, at least in some degree, over the course of the weekend. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well. Going to be trying to bring some information on just the fun. And it's kind of hard to describe or to really put a point on that. Everything that you just said is actually going to happen in real life with real people doing it in this game we call Warhammer, there for the event. And we know that's going to happen because we've seen 2 years worth of that happening so far. And they're just building strength on strength on strength to what is, I think, a gem of an event, like something that probably when, you know, it's like when you were, let's say you were kids just starting out in Warhammer, you wished like something like this would exist, and now it does.
I'm telling you, to that extent, you know, like, and there are, you see kids, you see younger people, newer people to the game that are involved. I mean, there's a guy at Gen Con that we played like the 40K Kill Team dungeon crawl with, who has since like gotten into Kill Team and is now playing, like, so there's the 40K Grand Narrative piece, and then also built into it is Kill Team, where there's, so every battle group of 10 people has at least one person who's only playing Kill Team, and they're like the special ops team player for the battle group as a whole. And so, like, you know, just how they've pulled all this stuff together, and then the amount of cosplay stuff, you know, I was talking about, like, my brother has the warlords both years have had immaculate cosplays that, mm-hmm. The first year I kind of threw together a Tanith cosplay. I got like black BD used. I used some of my, I know like sacrilege for some people, but I used like the collector's edition Tanith stuff that I got, like the patches, and put it on the BDUs and everything. And I mean, they were all black, and but I was just trying, just kind of getting into it. And and so this year I've really tried to, because I had the time to lean into it, I've really tried to take it to a next level, especially with the release of the Imperial Agents Codex. So in the first iteration, I was playing a Tanith, like they were a, you know, if you're familiar with the books or what have you, the Tanith no longer have a home planet that they pull Tanith recruits from. Aww. But they pull, yeah, go figure. They pull recruits from other planets, though, since then. Like they get some restocked along the way with people from different places. And so this was like a supposed to be a Tanith regiment or a piece to like back them up, but then they got diverted into the Zeperin system, and so it was a whole thing. Well, there was an Inquisitor with them that I had built into my Crusade force, little Inquisitor with his little retinue, and that Inquisitor is who I am in this iteration, and so that's who my warlord is in this. And now I've got this whole task force that I'm throwing down with, that's I'm really excited about. And so it's a lot of fun, and had a lot of fun kind of stepping into something that, you know, we were talking in the pre-show about like washes and things like that, and just how effective like washes can be in a lot of cases. I effectively found a way, as I'm building out this cosplay that I'm working on, that like cosplay washes. I'm not even kidding. I'm using like a wood stain.
Works the same way.
It did the same thing. Yeah. It did an amazing, like it really, like, you know, y'all have seen some of my progress. I mean, mm-hmm. It went from, and I went out, I got, so it was 3D printed black plastic. I used what I thought was like the darkest red I could find spray paint for. And it was still like cherry red. I was like, oh my gosh, like where am I? And then I varnished it, and then I put this like red mahogany stain on it, and it took it way down. It looks good. It added the depth. It did all the things that we want a wash to do on our models. And I was like, yeah, okay. I mean, tried, tested, proven. Just went from little model to big, you know, big cosplay armor piece, and did the exact same thing. It looks awesome.
It looks fabulous. Can't wait to see you in it over the course of the weekend. That is our show this week. In about 3 weeks, that whole thing's going down. We're talking about. I think they're sold out. So don't really want to. You know, maybe there's tickets. I don't know, but I don't
want to. It's worth checking on.
This might want to go to, but you can't right now. But you know, if you are in the area in Atlanta, come on by and see what's going on for sure, because the store will be there. You can hang out and see what, you know, all these events are going on, and maybe say hey to some of us. But that is our show this week. We'll be back next week bringing some more Warhammer goodness. We'll see you all, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!